This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we'll hear an excerpt from Jeremy Steinberg teaching the Platinum Performance USDF Region 3 Junior and Young Rider Clinic, where he talks about the importance of connection and how to improve it. And before that, we hear from the USEF developing dressage coach Debbie McDonald, who previews the Ream Acra FEI World Cup Finals, which take place at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas this week. But first, the USDF would like to remind everyone that the deadline for this year's USDF Arts Contest is July 1st. This annual contest was designed to highlight the creativity and the beauty of dressage and to allow current USDF members to express their interest in the sport outside of the competition arena. The winners will have their work published in the yearbook issue of the USDF Connection magazine, with the grand prize winner used as the cover of the USDF member guide. And a reminder, that deadline is July 1st, and it is open to current USDF members. So this year's Ream Acra FEI World Cup Final will be held in Las Vegas, Nevada once again, from April 16th through the 19th. There are nine nations taking part, including Britain's defending champion, Charlotte Dujardin, and we have three Danes, three Russians, two Dutch, two Swedes, two Germans, two Americans, one Spanish and one Finnish. Debbie McDonald joins me now because, Debbie, that was an occasion with special memories for you. Does that still give you goosebumps when you think about it and the atmosphere when you rode your freestyle?
Absolutely. I still get chills when I think about how that was received.
Let's start with that Western European League. There's nine slots there, Debbie, a lot of familiar faces.
Yes, that's for sure. I think Edward Gall, I think we can all say, is going to be right there. And there's no doubt about that. When it comes to the others, like I look at Isabel Wirth and I think, doesn't really seem to matter what, you know, she's going to be on. She is such a fierce competitor. So I never, ever take her out of the mix. I mean, every one of them, when you look at them, have the potential, depending on the atmosphere and how the horses react to it, which I think that is a huge factor that we all have to think about going into Las Vegas, because that can be quite a different atmosphere for certain horses. So yeah, they're right on top of you, more or less, you know?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It is that much more enclosed, as much as the Europeans are used to, obviously all the finalists are used to that indoor space and competing with that kind of pressure and atmosphere. But Vegas is very different to ride in, isn't it?
Very much so. I loved it. I mean, coming down that ramp and then those curtains opening up and you walk into that lit arena and you just, it just is something I'll never forget. And, you know, I fortunately had a horse that absolutely loved it. So that was really fun. But I do know there have been riders that have struggled with that atmosphere. The fact that you can't really go around the whole outside of the arena. And literally the seats start right where you're riding next to. So it's very, I would call it cozy.
Very intense indeed. Well, let's look at some of those names then from that first group, which has, of course, the most slots in, nine riders there, because there are a few names that some of our American listeners may not be so familiar with.
And I apologize for not having that list right in front of me. So if you can...
Okay. Well, we have Agnete Kirk-Thingard, who's one of the Danish entries on JoJo. We have Paulina Friedberg from Sweden, and Marlin Hamilton also from Sweden. And we watch, obviously, the top nations, as always, the Germans and the Dutch. We get very familiar with those. And there's actually a new German rider like Jessica von Braudel-Werdel riding Une BB. Some of those may not be so familiar over here.
Well, that's true. So, I mean, honestly, again, some of them are going to be new to this, and I think it's exciting that we have kind of a very mixed group, I think. And like I said, so many that could surprise us, and then hopefully we don't have any that disappoint.
Yes, you know, then that the occasion, as you said, will overcome them, because we all want a good result for everybody, no matter where they're from. And it's interesting to see that the few Russians this year, Debbie, we've got Elena Sidneva with Romeo Star, and Tatiana Dorofeva with Katseva Upperville, and also Inessa Makhlova.
And then the wild card down there.
Yes, Mr. X.
Yeah. And that is a fantastic horse.
Right.
That Mr. X horse is really a fantastic horse. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not going to say that they're going to be in the top group, but I think they're very interesting combinations to watch for sure.
And it'll be enormous experience for them, obviously, ready for the outdoor season as well. And it gives us also an indicator, doesn't it, Debbie, of the kind of form that's coming out of these countries, you know, before we gear up for Rio next year.
Oh, that is for sure. I think it's going to be a little bit of a, you know, obviously this is just the freestyle, but we still look at the combinations coming out of here that are possible Rio horses. And it's it'll be very interesting, again, to see how it all shakes out.
All right, well, let's talk about the two American entries, your good friend Stefan Peters with Legolas 92 and Laura Graves with Vedadis, who, of course, absolutely stunned everyone in the World Equestrian Games, of course, in Normandy last year. She really was the new kid on the block, as they say. But so tell us how the form has been for these two riders that you've seen over the winter training months.
I just was in California and saw Stefan ride Legolas, and it was quite good. So I always, always, always expect great things from Stefan. There's no doubt. He just, I don't know that there's any better rider in a test than Stefan. So I think he's definitely one to pay attention to. And I definitely think Laura Graves is also one to pay attention to. Like you said, it's a newer combination. This will be definitely a first-time experience for this horse in this atmosphere. But the way she handles it and the way he seems to listen to her, I don't think it's going to be a problem. I hope it's not. And I think that they both have so much confidence coming into this, and I think that it's going to be just a fun combination to watch for sure.
What have you seen of those two performances over the winter that has taken them up a notch and that they've worked on specifically? I mean, let's get technical about this, Debbie, because you're on the ground there watching them. You watch them in Normandy and through the winter. What subtle changes have you seen that have improved their performance?
Well, I definitely think, as far as Stefan's concerned, the changes are really quite superior to what they were even at the WEG. And his pirouettes are amazing. And, of course, the Piafassage has always been a strong tour for that horse. So that, I don't think, you know, anybody has any doubt about that. And as far as Laura is concerned, I think, you know, they're two learning Grand Prix together. So I think the more they keep learning, the more brilliant it starts to look. And that's kind of hard to believe when you think of back to the WEG. But nonetheless, I think there's still more to come out of those two.
Well, it will be interesting to watch them develop, of course, and see their reaction to that atmosphere and the space that Fagus provides for these finals. We have to talk about, of course, the defending champion, Charlotte Dujardin, with Vallegro. You've watched that horse emerge, Debbie, both in Europe and from afar. So tell us what you think of that horses and that performance, and whether you think they could retain the title given the competitors that are in this year's field.
I just can't see that anybody's going to be able to beat them, to be honest. I would have to say, if he's on his game, and I would say 99% of the time that horse and her are on their game, it's pretty hard to match. It's pretty hard. I think that horse is pretty special.
Well, we've not heard your comments about this horse before on the USDF podcast, so I'm curious to hear why you think this horse is so good, what makes him so special. You've seen a lot of classic horses over the years, Debbie, but what's different about him and this partnership?
I think when you watch a partnership like this, I mean, you know, it thinks back to great partnerships that we've seen over the years, but this one goes with superb hind legs and power, great changes, extensions, fantastic, half passes to die for, pirouettes. I mean, you name it, there isn't really a hole in the horse. So, you know, there was maybe one time I ever saw him a slightly off the game, and he still was pretty hard to beat. So for those reasons alone, and just knowing that horse's personality, I think he's going to love this environment. So I'm gonna put my cards pretty much on Charlotte.
As you say, even when he's not 100%, he's still good enough, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it.
All right, so let's look at maybe two or three riders that are going to give her a run for the money. Let's look at your crystal ball, Debbie.
Okay, I'm going to say Edward Gall and the Two Americans.
You think both of those could...
I think those are the ones that are going to... I mean, they're not... You know what I'm saying? I mean, to me, there's always a chance that a horse can have a good day and a bad day. But if we're talking everybody on a good day, those would be my four to be watching.
All right. Well, we haven't mentioned Fabian Ludgemeier, of course, from Germany with D'Agostino, a tremendous combination again and always very consistent. But, you know, as you say, horses can go wrong on the day. Do you think she and Isabel will be competing for those minor places?
Oh, you never count the Germans out. That is for sure. And like I said, with Isabel, I've seen that girl ride for years now, and when she goes down that center line, she goes down every single time to win it. I think the other one the same. I mean, she was amazing at Wake. So I think, I really think it's going to be a very, very fun competition. There's no doubt about that. I think there's going to be everybody on the edge of their seats by the freestyle night.
Right.
And
as always, of course, we're going to see a battle between the Germans and the Dutch for those other placings. I think that's pretty much guaranteed, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
All right. Well, I think...
It sure is.
Well, as you say, it's going to be very, very exciting because it's back here in the States in front of an American audience, which really has appreciated the final coming to Vegas. And I'm sure for you too, Debbie, a nostalgic time to go back to that arena and obviously support the Americans, but generally enjoy the competition and just being there in that atmosphere again.
Oh, for sure. And it's going to be a kind of a special occasion for us. Again, on Friday afternoon, we're going to retire Wizard, and they're going to do like a little tribute to Perry Thomas for what he's done for Vegas as well as our sport. So what an appropriate place to have it all happen.
Absolutely. Well, lots of emotions, I'm sure, coming out of your camp then for that weekend. Well, I hope it all goes well, that you enjoy the occasion, and thank you again for coming on the program, Debbie, and sharing your thoughts for this year's ReMacra FEI World Cup Finals.
Oh, you're so welcome. Always a pleasure.
Coverage of the ReMacra FEI World Cup Finals will be available on FEI TV for those of you who have a subscription. You'll find a link in the show notes to a USDF Connection article entitled Welcoming the World. That's a link via eTrack on the USDF website. And remember that you can find more information about the World Cup Finals by going to their website at worldcuplasvegas.com. And now we present the first of two excerpts from Jeremy Steinberg teaching the Platinum Performance USDF Region 3 Junior and Young Rider Clinic, in which he talks about the importance of connection and how to improve it.
You know, I think anytime you have one, you know, that has any question with the contact, you're looking at a problem. You know what I mean? So not to say with, oh my God, that's a huge problem. Just to say in general with any of them, when they have kind of some issues within the contact, it's not something you want to look at lightly or ignore. You know, you definitely want to be in there, whether it's just basic work with some transitions and things, you really want to be saying to him, that's a conversation that we're going to have, and we're going to have it as long as it takes till things sort themselves out. Because the way that the horses connect is everything when it comes to the way that they use their body, right? So that connection is really just showing you the way the energy travels. So if there is a wobble in the frame, the rein doesn't feel right, it's light, it's heavy, it's too strong, it's braced, that's saying to you that the conveyor belt over his top line that the energy travels on out to your hand, there's a hiccup in there somewhere. So anything that you do with them, a shoulder and a half pass, a flying change, anything, is going to be affected by that, right? Because energy in everything has to still keep traveling from the hind legs up to your hand. So anytime that connection, problem, issue, bobble, whatever it is there, definitely stay a little focused, fixated on it. So all that being said, though, every horse has something in the connection, because that's where the work lives. That's where the body starts to really kind of unite hind legs through to the hand, the neck, the top line, the whole body really goes to work within that connection. It's kind of one of the biggest differences between a dressage horse and all the other disciplines. We don't always connect like as a Western horse or a jumper. They don't have to work the same way in their back from their hind leg to the hand that we need them to do as dressage horses. So I always go in the connection is where they really start to become dressage horses. Like I might not be able to have that conversation with a big kick and send you up right up to my hand, but I'm not going to back off the idea that you have to connect to the hand. So I'm going to keep the leg on. If it's a little sideways, it's fine. You go sideways and you just keep saying to him, my leg is going to stay on and you're going to drive up there. The big thing with that is to kind of say to him, I'm not going to let you dictate. I'm not going to let you tell me how I can ride you into my hand. The hard part with that is you have to be diplomatic. Because if you get too strong and you get him defensive, he's not going to go up to the hand. And a little bit of that is, it can be that they just are sensitive in the mouth. It can be that they're a hotter type. It can just be that they maybe don't want to work that hard through their body. But you have to kind of put them all together and work accordingly. Transitions, that's probably the best thing you can do for them. And the trot canters in particular, tons of trot canters, where you just keep saying to the energy, you know, a lesser energy back to trot, a greater energy up to canter, a lesser energy back to trot. And you just keep saying to them with each transition, I want that flow of energy up to my hand to get more and more solidified and easier to create. Because again, we want to say to them, you're not going to dictate my ability to take the contact. I'm not going to take a lot at once. I'm not going to overface you with how much weight or pressure I'm going to put on your mouth. But I'm not going to let you tell me I can't touch your mouth. Huge part of that is that little bit of bend. The bend and the little bit of sideways, I think, is a really good compromise where you're going, I am going to take a little bit. I might do it within the bend where I give you a little, I don't want them like bulging out with the outside shoulder, but I might give you a little escape path to go just a touch sideways or a little out so that I can at least start to take a greater weight pressure on your mouth. Then over time, we just start to close that outside rein or that bulge up a little bit more and more. But I find with him, if we just grab onto both reins, he's just going to shut down, right? He's going to get too defensive to it. The leg yield's the best for that when they're trying to kind of canter without you. Because that ability to jump upward to get to canter, if you push him a little sideways leg yield, you make his hind legs cross. The hind legs can't actually mechanize the canter to happen. So the moment you feel his body trying to canter, you push a little sideways leg yield. Huge thing I do with them too, when they're like that in the contact, to kind of take his body, squeezing him between your leg and your hand, and getting the arc of his top line to start to bow up underneath your body, right? Or up through his back, kind of under the saddle. Like I said, that could be that they're lazy and just don't want to push through. It can be that they're a little too sensitive in the mouth, right? That they don't like that weight pressure of the contact on the mouth. The transition's the best thing. And I would literally, I'd go 20, 25 minutes sometimes quietly without a walk break, just quiet repetition with the transitions, right? Going, I'm just going to quietly sit here until I get a little bit, what I always think of is a little bit of resignation. That feeling in him where he goes, I'm not minding so much anymore. I'm kind of giving in to this idea that mom's going to hold a little bit on the contact or take pressure on my mouth. It's pointless to fight it. I'm getting a little tired through doing all the transitions, and they start to just settle in a touch more. Any chance you get, keep taking the rein a little shorter. Not, like I said, ridiculously short or anything, but keep trying to kind of find those little moments where you can start to put a little bit more and more of that pressure on. That just starts to say to them, I'm going to contain your top line and I'm going to close it up a little more between my leg and hand. Like the trot canter is probably the best thing you can do, right? Lots of canter work. Because the momentum of the canter itself, just more forward energy, right, is going to send them more into your hand, like a racehorse, right? Racehorse, grab onto the bit and go. It's literally just that energy of the canter flowing and pumping through his body that's going to send him more and more up to the head. The same time, the canter forces the back to move. Like in the trot, the back can stay pretty still and the legs just move. Not always. I mean, the back does move in the trot, but not the same as the canter. In the canter, it fluctuates like you feel them, right? Like you know that expression, a rocking horse canter. Horses don't have a rocking horse trot, right? A rocking horse canter isn't even really a good canter, but it can describe the way it feels. So that rock and roll motion makes the back move. We know that the connection, like I was saying earlier, the connection is the arc, the lift, or the use of the back, uniting the hind legs up to his forehand or up to your hand. So the more work we do that makes his back unlock and his back move, the better connected he's going to get. The more canter you do in general, the more he's going to push weight up into your hand. So with those two things in mind, like I said, those trot canters are great because the trot canters force the back to move. The canter itself just gets him up to your hand. If you feel those little bobbles, you know, where he kind of pulls at, tugs at, dips around in the frame, close your leg on him. Push at him a little bit where you go, you should be giving me, within reason, quietly, you should be giving me enough power from behind up to my hand that there's no time, no moment where you have that room to become instable in the neck. You feel that instability in the contact where he wobbles around. I always think of it as it's a loss of energy out the back door that's freeing up the neck to kind of move and become wobbly. So anytime you feel that wobble in there, and you don't have to go overboard with it, put your leg on a little bit, close him up into your hand and say, if you would stay energized or powered up into the contact, there wouldn't be that room for that wobble. Where you just keep saying this flow of energy from your hind legs, it can't falter. Where you just keep saying, I am going to take a hold of the contact and I am going to push at you, but I'm going to do it, like I said, in a way where you don't feel trapped, but in a way where I do say to you that that's an acceptance that you have to give me. That's a rideability level you have to give me. So if he picks up the canter, you think even stronger leg yield, keep driving, don't take the leg off. And that's, again, that mindset of going, I'm not going to let you dictate to me how I can ride your contact, how I can ride the top line, how I can ride your body. Where you just keep going, every time you fuss, you're not going to slow down, and you're not going to get away from this bending aid right now. Don't be bashful, you know what I mean, about taking the contact, whether it's about putting the leg on, things like that, but always doing it in a way where I go, it just has to be productive. It can't add adrenaline, meaning it can't make him nervous. But if I'm too passive, you know, and I let him fuss around, he's always going to fuss around. If I get too strong and he gets defensive, he's going to get worse about the defensive nature to it. That's one of the best words as a dressage rider, trainer, you know, working with horses that you want to remember when you're riding, is defensiveness in a horse, right? The moment they become defensive, it's the game's over because their bodies start to then work against you. It's not even on purpose at that point. They're worried about whether it's outside stimulus, whether it's about you doing something to them, whether it's about something they've made up in their own minds. The moment they become defensive, they start kind of blocking you out of their body. Self-preservation starts to take over. Doesn't mean sometimes that the work we do doesn't create a little of that. You know, it's like when you take a young one and you try flying change for the first time, they're going to get nervous. They get a little defensive, but you just keep it in mind. So you go, I can't let any of that build. Sometimes, like my own young horse is a little like that in the contact as well. I find with her, if I hold for too long, she just gets frustrated. So for her, I do have to give her a long rein sometimes. So you have to kind of play that by ear with him. If I give him a long rein on a walk break, is he calm about it and lets me put him back to work? Or is it harder to put him back to work? If I walk him on the contact, does he get more frustrated by it and get more fussy? Or does he get calmer and better about it, right? That's something as a rider, I would never say from the ground, you have to do one or the other, because when you're sitting on him every day, it's going to change every day. Like I said, with my horse, I some days, in the walk breaks, I just work her on the contact. I do a little leg yield. I keep her busy. And other times I just go, no, you can have a long rein and really kind of have your own top line for a minute and just have a total break for your muscles. Sometimes that whip can really work to your advantage. This where that light little brush of the whip, not even, you know, a tap or anything, but just the little tickle of the whip, because it's no pressure from the leg. Sometimes the squeeze pressure from the leg with the pressure of the rein becomes over, like it overloads them mentally. Not always, but it can be a lot where you have to squeeze at them with the leg and you don't want to let go in the hand, and they get a little in that, not claustrophobic, but a little panicky that there's a lot of pressure being applied. So play a little with that tickle of the whip to kind of go, does that actually make things better or worse to the power level of the energy traveling up to my hand? Kind of think very quietly. You think my hand in a sense is going to work a little like a side rein, not rigid, you know, where it never gives or yields or anything, but on a basic level, your hand is going to work like a side rein, just like you do if you were lunging him. If you had the side reins on and you picked up the canter and he went against the contact, what would you do from the ground if you were lunging him? You send him a little forward, right? You drive at him a bit. So like if you're lunging one and you say trot canter, and the side reins are on and they set their jaw and they go a little against it, you just chase them a little forward up to it. So the forward energy driving against the resistance of the contact to drive the top line round. But you think my first order of business when I feel them working against the hand is to make sure the contact is stable and I'm gonna send them up to it. As you feel his neck start to soften, as you feel the resign, where he starts to go, okay, I'm getting more accepting, I'm giving in, I'm giving up on resisting against this, push for even more.
And we'll be running the second part of this presentation in next week's episode. And for more information on educational opportunities available through the USDF, please visit eTrack at usdf.org. This podcast is available as a free subscription from iTunes. Just go to the podcast store and look for USDF. And then you can download it to a number of podcast apps, including Podbean and Stitcher. Until next week, thank you for listening. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.